Me to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. It's a beautiful day outside, isn't it? It just makes you feel good inside, and it's wonderful to be with God's people. Last week, we looked at the topic of suffering, and more specifically, looking at the question, does God give us more than we can bear? The very quick answer to that question is yes. God not only will, but He does give us more than we can bear. And the reason He does that is so that we can trust His grace. So often we like to trust in our own strength, but God gives us more than we can bear so that we can learn to trust in His grace. Well, with that in mind, I would like to follow that lesson up this morning by examining the command given in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, where Paul demanded of the Galatians, bear up one another's burdens. Bear up one another's burdens. So here's where we are. God does give us more than we can bear. And indeed, we should bear one another's burdens. So then here's the question. How do we bear others' burdens? How do we actually do this? If God gives each of us more than we can bear, and we have to bear up one another's burdens, how do we actually bear one another's burdens? This morning, I would like to look at the more negative side of the question and really look to see what I would claim is one of the more common problems or mistakes that we make whenever we try to comfort and bear up one another's burdens. Next week, we're going to look at the more positive side, a positive example of how to do this. But if you're like me, knowing how to bear up someone else's burdens, knowing how to comfort, it's a difficult task. Because when a brother or sister is going through a very emotionally or personally difficult situation, knowing what to say, knowing what to do, it's often like walking on eggshells. You want to be there, you want to say the right thing, you want to do the right thing, you want to show that you love them, you want to show that you care, but so often you end up putting your foot in your mouth. How do we do this well? Well, for us to understand how to do this well, we first have to understand what common problems we make. To do this, we're going to look at a story of Christ recorded for us in Mark chapter 5. This is the story of Jairus' daughter and also the woman with the blood excretion. So let's begin. We're going to read both the account in Mark and Luke this morning. Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 21. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under the many physicians and had spent all that she had and had no better, but rather she just grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garment?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace, and you will be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately, the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. It's a powerful, emotional story. But here's what happens in this story. You have two people that are suffering. The first one that really comes in contact with Jesus is the woman with the blood discharge. Let's note her circumstance. If you look at verse 48, verse 34 with me. I transposed my figures. Verse 34. Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace, and you will be healed of your disease." Her situation, if you look up, verse 25, there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. She had a discharge of blood for 12 years. Why do you think there's that detail in the story of her having the discharge for 12 years? Some of you, I see, are understanding. If you go down and you look at verse 42, immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. So here's what you have. You have a woman who has had a blood discharge for 12 years. She herself is much older than that, but she had a blood discharge for 12 years. And then because of that, look at verse 26. She had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather she grew worse. She's at her last stick. There's nothing else that she can do. Nothing else that she can do. She has had this for 12 years. She has seen everyone that she has seen. She has gone to every physician that she can go to, and she knows of nothing else to do. So she goes to the master teacher, reaches out, touches his robe. A part of his power goes, heals her, and then he says, "Daughter, go. You're made well." That's the first one. The second one, however, is the girl who has died. Here, Jairus, if you look up and notice Jairus in verse 22, "Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue," Jairus by name. Generally throughout the book of Mark and the rest of the Synoptic Gospels, the Jews are not seen in positive light at all. The Gentiles are seen in much more positive light. The Jews are the ones that are persecuting Jesus. They are railing against him. They're speaking against him. But here you have a man of faith, Jairus. His daughter is at the point of death, and there's nothing else that he knows to do, so he goes to Jesus. Jesus then goes back with him, and then he heals his daughter, and she arises. She arises. What's then the point of this story? Well, I think if you note the story, here's what we have. You have two people that are suffering for very different reasons. They're suffering for very different physical reasons. Their emotional situation is similar but different. Their personal situation is different. But here's, I think, the point of the story. Rather than minimizing the suffering of either of them, Jesus sympathized with the suffering of both of them. Let me again repeat that. Rather than minimizing the suffering of either of them, Jesus sympathized and even empathized with the suffering of both of them. Let's now go to the book of Luke. I want us to read this account likewise from Luke's perspective with this in mind. As we go through it the second time, and my verses, by the way, I realize these are from Luke, the Luke 8:48 and Luke 8:54. I want us to note as we go through this story how Jesus interacts with both of these individuals that are suffering. You have two individuals that are in a similar but very different situation. Jesus does not minimize either of their suffering, but rather what he does is he sympathizes with both of them. Let's look at Luke chapter 8, verse 40. Luke chapter 8, verse 40. "When Jesus returned The crowd welcomed him, for they were waiting for him. And there came a man from Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue. And falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. Stop here and think through this story with me. Here you have an upstanding citizen who has no idea of what else to do. He literally has more than he can bear. This is not something that he can bear by himself. He understands he needs someone greater who can bear this burden. So he goes to Jesus. By this point in the ministry of Jesus, Jesus was renowned for his miracles. He had healed. He had given of his power. He had given of his might. His might was known throughout the region. So he goes to Jesus and he implores him, "I have one daughter who is about to die. Come and heal her." Parents, can you imagine what this man's going through? A 12-year-old, innocent, helpless little child. And a father has to watch her die. There's nothing he can do. Nothing he can do at all. Except go to Jesus. And so then in verse 42, Jesus went. And as the people pressed around him, there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years. And though she had spent all of her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. Stop here. I don't think us as 21st century Anglos understand what this first century Hellenist Jew would have been going through. According to the Levitical codes, she would have been an outcast. She would have been seen, according to Levitical code, as a leper. Not only did she have a discharge of blood that would have led to her death at some point, but I don't think death is her chief concern here. Rather, she wants this healed so that she can return to society. So here on the one hand, you have a father whose daughter is dying, and on the other hand, you have a leper who has a discharge of blood, who has no way to be healed, but wants to be back to society because she is seen as a leper. Again, look, there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and though she had spent all of her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. I think when we read this text, we take our cultural assumptions and we assume she's wanting to be healed so that she won't die. I don't think that's her chief of motivations. Rather than seeking healing from death, like Jairus is wanting for his daughter, she's wanting to be back in society. So here you're Jesus. Jairus has come to you and his daughter is dying. And then a woman comes up behind you, touches of your garment, and she just wants to be cleansed of her bodily discharge so that she can be welcomed back away from her leprosy. And of course, it's going to allow for her physical healing. And of course, it will prolong her life. But here you have two very different situations. A woman who is about to die, let's just be real. She has an illness from which she should have just realized a long time ago she's never going to be healed. She has a terminal illness. This is just her lot. And then you have a poor little girl that's about to die that Jesus needs to rush to. She's on the verge of death. She's about to die. Which one would you help? If I had been Jesus, let me tell you what I probably would have done. Honey, I'm on my way to heal a little girl. And you have the audacity to come to me and want to be healed of your blood? Ha! There's an innocent little girl who has her whole life ahead of her. She has done nothing to deserve what is about to happen to her. You, on the other hand, you've lived your life as an outcast. You've lived your life as one among the dogs. Accept your lot and go. You're terminally sick. Just go. There's someone else who is really in need, who actually needs my help. How dare you come to me? Well, how does Jesus handle this woman? Continuing in the text, look at verse 44. She came up behind and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus said, "Who was it that touched me?" But all denied it. Peter said, "Master, the crowd surrounds you and are pressing in on you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me." And when the woman had seen, she was not hidden. She came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. She's trembling. It's like a poor little child who knows better. "But I had no other way. I had no other way. I didn't think that I was worthy to come to you face to face. I didn't think that you would accept me if I had just come into your presence. I knew that with certainty your disciples would not have accepted me had I come to them. So I came behind you and I just touched the fringe of your garment that I may be healed." Verse 48, Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." While he was still speaking, someone from the ruler's house came and said, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher anymore." Boy, you talk about just the most insensitive of insensitive things that someone could say. "Your daughter's already dead. There's more important things that the rabbi can be doing. Don't trouble him anymore. Your problems don't matter. Let him go deal with people who he can actually help." But Jesus, on hearing this, answered them, "Do not fear. Only believe and she will be well." And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the father and mother of the child. And all were weeping and mourning for her, but he said, "Do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. And taking her by the hand, he called, saying, "Child, arise." And her spirit returned. And she got up at once, and he directed that something should be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened. Do you note in both of these cases, Jesus could have simply minimized their suffering? He could have said to the woman, "I'm on my way to heal a little girl." And perhaps if Jesus hadn't have stopped and had this interaction with this woman, he would have made it to the girl before she'd actually died. I don't know. But that's not what Jesus did. Rather than minimizing her problems, he sympathized with her. And then when he gets to the little girl, the crowd is saying, "Do not trouble the teacher." Jesus could have said, "There are people who are spiritually dying. There are those who are spiritually dying who need my truth. I'm not going to trouble myself with one little girl. I'm going to go to the masses that need spiritual life." But Jesus did not minimize their suffering. He sympathized and he healed. What did Jesus do? He bore their burdens. He knew that each of them had something that was greater than either of them could bear. So he bore their burdens on himself and he healed them. So, Brother Christ, practically what I would recommend, we need to stop minimizing each other's suffering. And we need to show each other sympathy. Now, I'm going to get quite practical for the next 5 or so minutes. I would like to share with you various examples of things that I have heard said to me by Christians or I've heard in other contexts that I think minimize other suffering. Now, let me say this as a prerequisite. You may have said these in the best of intentions. It is difficult to know what to say when a brother or sister is suffering. It is incredibly difficult what to know to say when you're going through the receiving line at a funeral. What to say when a brother or sister finds out they have terminal cancer. When someone goes through a terrible relationship status. It's awful to know what to say. And you may have said these with the best of intentions. But I would also recommend we need to stop, if we've been doing so, minimizing each other's suffering. Number one, this is one that gets under my skin. That's just first world problems. First world problems. You may have seen this on the internet. Huh, you can't figure this out? That's just a first world problem. You're stressed about finals? Just be glad that you have a school to go to in the first place. That's first world problems. You cannot get your finances right? Puh. That's first world problems. Be happy that you have a house in the first place. First world problems. Well, brethren, yes. There are individuals in third world countries who are going through physical situations far more difficult than we face. But simply to write off one another's problems as just first world problems, we're minimizing each other's suffering. Another one. It could be worse. It could be worse. So many times when Jessica was going through her first trimester, she was sick. She had people that came up to her and say, it could be worse. Just be glad that you have the baby. It could be worse. What's that doing? Was she thankful that she was pregnant and she was able to conceive? Absolutely. And could her situation have been worse? Absolutely. But simply saying, you know, it could be worse. Imagine if Jesus had gone up to the woman and had said, it could be worse. You could have a daughter that's dying. That's not what Jesus said. Jesus sympathized with her. Another one. Well, at least you're not. Fill in the blank. I find out that I'm just really, really sick. That I have stage 2. Again, this is hypothetical. I find out that I have stage 2 skin cancer. And I'm going to have to go through chemotherapy. Well, at least you don't have stage 5 cancer. At least you don't have stage 4 and you're going to have to go through radiation as well. At least you're not going through that. What are we doing, brethren? We're minimizing each other's suffering. Another one. It'll all be worth it. This was everyone's favorite phrase when Jessica was pregnant. It's all going to be worth it. Vomiting every day and being sick to where you can barely even move. It's all going to be worth it. Okay, maybe. But is that really showing sympathy in someone's situation? What about whenever a brother or sister is overwhelmed by anxiety and I just go up to them and say, you know what? Jerry, it's all going to be worth it when you get to heaven. Yeah, that may be true. But that's minimizing her current situation. Now, next week I'm going to talk about how faith factors into this more completely. But brethren, we have to stop minimizing each other's suffering. Yes, you had a woman that had who had blood coming from her, and you had a 12-year-old girl that had died. It was very different types of suffering, but don't minimize them. And my favorite of all, I understand. No, you don't. You understand nothing. This is what I think that is said when we're trying to empathize with a situation, but I understand. No, you don't. David Lamphere, some of you may have read his book, A Life Lost and a Life Found. He co-authored it with Wilson Adams. David was one of my shepherds in Bowling Green, and he lost his son and his wife within a close time of each other, went through a really difficult situation. David has reflected on his time when his son passed away. And he had hundreds upon hundreds of people to come whenever his son passed away through the receiving line. Out of the hundreds of things that were said to him throughout those days, he remembers one thing that was said to him. There was a young man that went up to him and said, David, I understand what you're going through. I lost my uncle a couple years ago. Now, he didn't. He wanted to deck that little fella. I just lost my firstborn. I just lost my son. And you understand what I'm going through because you lost your uncle? You understand nothing. Brethren, what does that do? Yes, we may be able to empathize to a degree, but whenever we say, I understand your situation, well, no one understands another situation perfectly. We minimize what someone else is going through. And the final one I'll give for this, it's all going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know what? It's going to be okay. I'm a stressor. I get myself stressed out all the time. And that's a burden I have to bear, and a burden that I need help bearing. My situation is very different from someone who has a terminal illness, who's facing cancer, who's just lost a loved one, who's just been raped. It's very different. But brethren, my suffering may be essentially different from yours, and your suffering may be essentially different from mine, but let's stop trying to one-up each other's suffering. Let's stop trying to minimize one another's suffering. Whenever I say, I understand, it could be worse, at least you're not going through this, I minimize what you're going through. I minimize your suffering. Rather than doing these things, what we need to do is we need to show sympathy like Jesus did. Whenever a woman came to him with blood, your faith has made you well. Daughter, go in peace. Whenever a father came to him who had a girl that was dying, and even when she was dead, he did not leave them and he did not minimize their problems, but he showed them sympathy. Here's things that we can say. I'm sure this must be tough for you. I'm sure this must be tough for you. You know, I don't understand fully what you're going through. I don't understand the intricacies of your emotional burden, but I am sure this must be tough for you. Another one. I haven't been in your situation, but I can relate to this. You know, so let's say, for example, I do find out I have stage 2 cancer. And I have stage 2 skin cancer, and you had stage 1 lung cancer a couple years ago. You know, Ryan, I haven't been in your situation, but I can relate to what it's like to go through chemotherapy. I can. I can relate to what it's like to go through radiation. And I can relate to it. No, I have not been in your exact situation, but I can relate to these aspects of it. One of the best, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. But what can I do to help? Another one? I'm praying for you. No, I don't know how to bear your burden, but I do know what I can do. I can pray for you. One of the best, I love you. I love you. I find out that Matt has just had a terrible wreck. May never walk again. What do you say? It's going to be okay. I understand what you're going through. I broke a toe last week. I know what it feels like. Just have faith. It's all going to work out. That's foolish. Brother, I don't know what to say. But I love you. Tina's just found out she has cancer. I understand what it's like. I had a sinus infection a couple weeks ago. At least you only have one type of cancer and not many. At least you're alive. Tina, I don't know what to say, but I love you and I'm praying for you. The one that I recommended last week, rather than telling each other this lie that God will never give us more than we can bear, God will give you more grace. Tina, the weaker you feel as you get sick, you may not feel it, but God's going to give you more grace. Matt, as you go into the depths of a depression over what's happened, know that God is going to give you more grace. And perhaps one of the best, if we're at a complete loss for words, just silence. Do you know what Job's friends did for him at the beginning? They came with him and they sat in the ashes. He had been through something so terrible they didn't know what to say. All they did was they sat in the ashes. And then for about 35 chapters after that, they open their big mouths and make themselves into utter fools. The only thing they did that was good in that entire book was they came with him and they sat in the ashes. You know, there's something comforting about silence, because silence shows vulnerability. Silence shows, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And Matt, what you're going through is so difficult. I just don't even know what to say. If you want to talk, I'm going to be right here beside you. But if you just want to sit here and us cry together, as Romans 12 tells me, I'm going to mourn with those who mourn. Tina, I know that you're terrified, and I'm sure that you must be overwhelmed with emotions. But I just don't know what to say. I'm just going to sit here with you. Rebecca, I know you've just lost a loved one. I don't know what to say. I love you, but I'm just going to sit here with you. Brethren, it's difficult. The call that we have as Christians to bear one another's burdens is a difficult, difficult call. Because if I had everyone here this morning fill out a note card with what you suffer on a weekly basis, I would probably get 100 different answers. I don't know how to tailor an answer to every single one of you, because I have never and I will never been through exactly what you've been through. And I am not going to minimize what you're going through, but I am going to try to show sympathy. Because as we seek to sow sympathy, all we really can do is lead people to Jesus. Isn't that what Jairus did? He knew that his daughter was sick, so he went to Jesus. And then because of that, Jesus said, "Daughter," this is to the woman with the blood, "daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." I will admit, I have been in situations the last 2 years with many of you. I simply did not know what to say. I'll use just one very practical one. The night that Doug lost his son, Daniel Kirby and I went. It's about 1 or 2 in the morning, I can't remember. I had no idea what to say. Diane was still recovering and she was in rehab. And Doug had just found out that his son had died. What do you say? What do you say? I'm going to back up just a little bit. Do I say any of these things? Oh, that's just a first world problem, Doug. Children in third world countries, they barely even make it to age 5. It could be worse. You could have lost all your children. Well, at least all your children didn't pass away. It's all going to be worth it if you get to heaven. I understand what you're going through, and it's just all going to be okay. He would have had every right to have decked me right then and there had I said any of those things to him. It's foolish, absolute foolishness, for these things to come from the mouth of a Christian to a brother or sister in need. I was not wise enough to say any of those things. I had no idea what to say. The only one that I said was, I said, "Doug, I love you." And then the three of us sat with him in silence. That's all we could do. Brethren, as Christians, we go through things together that are far, far beyond our limited wisdom in this life. And rather than trying to be the cleverest and trying to be the one that's going to provide the words of comfort, just show love. Just show sympathy. Just be there. Because only Jesus is ever going to take away our burden. It's only ever going to be Jesus who will. So how do we bear each other's burdens? I've not provided a full answer this week. I'm going to continue this next week. But rather than minimizing others' burdens, what we need to do is we need to show sympathy. And then that sympathy should point them to faith in God. If you will, let's pray together. Our God of all comfort. God, at times, I wonder, and perhaps we all wonder, why you make your children suffer so much in this life. God, I know, and perhaps we all know, that you are all good, all loving, and all kind. And you're the epitome of mercy. But God, so often this life leaves us feeling alone, feeling stressed, feeling overwhelmed, and feeling burdened beyond our strength. God, I don't claim to know your ways. I do know that your providential hand is watching over us. And I know that your loving heart is protecting your children. But Father, why must there be so much suffering? Why there must be so much suffering of your people, the ones that try to please you, the ones that try to serve you, the ones that try to seek you? God, I just don't know. But God, please bear our burdens. Give us grace. Give us the grace of Christ that has brought us out of the pit of death and has taken us to heights of life. Father, we know that it is only that grace that can take us from the pits of emotional agony and make us rise on wings of eagles. God, give us grace. And our Father, we pray that you give us wisdom and you give us love as we seek to bear one another's burdens. Give us the wisdom to know how to sympathize, and give us love that we may sympathize. Our God, be with us. We pray all these things in the name of Christ through the Spirit. Amen. Maybe you need to come to Jesus this very morning. I've talked a lot about emotional suffering this morning. But we need not forget the spiritual suffering that goes on in each of our lives. The spiritual struggle versus sin. Only God can win that battle. And he's already won it at the cross. If you need to come to Jesus this very morning, come forward while we stand and sing.